Honestly Unbalanced.
Welcome everyone to episode 137 of Honestly Unbalanced, where we have honest and open conversations with people that have tried to make your life a little bit better. And I'm joined this week by yoga teacher and former studio owner, Alessandra Oram. We talk about choosing alignment over comfort. We explore leaving a successful studio, motherhood, time, values, lineage, creativity, and what it means to begin again without burning everything down. It's a wonderful grounded conversation about courage, change, and listening before life forces you to. I want to share a few magic quotes from this episode. Leaving wasn't abandoning yoga. It was about honoring this season of life. And then another one. I realized I was living someone else's vision, even though I loved it. And last one. You don't have to reject a beautiful life to choose another. So, this is a wonderful episode, but before you get going, I want to tell you a little bit about what we've got for you guys. As usual, there's lots of discounts. Lifeform yoga mats, you can get 10% off with code HUSLER10. And if you're into your barefoot shoes and connecting with the floor beneath you, then code HUSLER20 will get you 20% off the whole range of Viva barefoots, whether that's shoes for climbing, for strength building, for running, or for your kids. Very soon, end of February, I have a retreat exclusively for yoga teachers in the UK. It's a small, intimate affair, which is part about building knowledge, part about rediscovering your why, and part about connecting with community. If you're interested in that, head to adamhustler.com to get a little bit more info. But now, guys, enjoy the episode. Honestly
Unbalanced. Now, I always use the kind of analogy with yoga teaching of the architecture or the architect and the structural engineer, in that the architect kind of design is you cueing what a pose should kind of vaguely look like, and the structural engineer is like the detail of what's actually going on in the pose and making sure that works. Now, as an architect, am I doing architects disservice there? Is there a lot more to architecture than the visuals? And then did you use that in your yoga teaching?
I'd say, so I have a background in architecture in that I studied it. And when you study it, it becomes like never ending 7 years, which feels like a lot as a uni student. And then when I got into the world of architecture, I kind of felt like a phony architect. Like I felt I was definitely on the creative side and the visual side and very intimidated by like the engineering side, the techie side. So I definitely don't think you do disservice. Like on my side, I was definitely more of the creative side, and I felt so intimidated by the big projects, like the shopping malls and those giant projects which you end up getting into in the beginning. And I ended up, as my career went on, I ended up kind of like downsizing, moved into like interior architecture and then into event design, so that I could feel that I was more intact with my design rather than looking at this big project that's going to take 5 to 10 years to complete. So I ended up personally just winding down to the more creative side, where I could feel like more input on the creative side and see my creativity come to light. And so when it came to my yoga practice, I felt like I had all these tools, now being a business owner, to kind of present myself very, very well, kind of like what I can take from architecture into what I am now as a kind of as a marketing person of my own making. It's that I know how to display on one single piece of paper, what is my objective? What am I trying to tell you? I really am grateful for that experience of architecture on helping me shape my graphic background, my presentation skills. Definitely came from being very shy, and architecture forces you to kind of like put your whole heart and soul on a piece of paper and have everyone judge it. So same as a yoga practice, you're there standing so intimidated, but I guess I kind of learned to I was happy in that world of yoga because I had learned to kind of just bear my creative soul on a piece of paper.
But has
So
that, do you think,
I
informed
guess.
your yoga teaching and the style in which you teach, like in terms of the aesthetics? Because your style, I know, is very functional, but the flows look stunning as well. Like at the beginning, was there a bias towards how it looked? And I think that's very common for new teachers at the beginning of their journey or new practitioners. And has that evolved in any way?
Yeah, that could be kind of like my OCD coming in of like l lines and aesthetic. Definitely when you put your when I started putting myself on social media and then you watch your video back, you're like, oh, I didn't like that line. And that's, I guess, the combination of being a dancer as a young girl, ballet dancing. I never went into it professionally, but like dance has always been, I think if you've done it as a young girl, it kind of shapes you on in life. So you're coordinated, you understand how to stand, how to hold your arms. And I guess that element of like architecture did make me really focused on alignment. Like I wasn't satisfied if I saw a picture of myself like out of line. Like it annoyed me visually.
Did it still?
So definitely, yeah, definitely.
Okay. And then let's talk about the studio space, because the studio space you created, you've left behind your studio baby, I know, and we'll get to that. But that was absolutely stunning. And there's not many like it. Like I've, as you have, traveled around Europe a lot teaching in studios. And I think part of it's funding. Like a lot of studios are very bare bones, but not necessarily bare bones and minimal in an intentional way. It's more just, this piece is empty, let's paint it white, and let's paint a mandala on the wall. And there we go. So how much did you want to focus on what the space looked like when you created that space? Was it in an old mechanics warehouse? Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. It was a space. I always dreamt of having a yoga studio. And when I went into the yoga world, I purposely put like my footer on my all my emails, like yoga and design. Like I was really focused on like I really wanted to give the experience of like practicing yoga in spaces that I loved, on an architectural point of view. And even when I started doing retreats, I was really looking for spaces that really evoked some kind of emotion out of me. And so when I found this workshop space, which was an old mechanics, I kind of told my husband, like, both of us fell in love with it. And I was like, wow, this is just telling me I need to do yoga here. Like, I had really good vibe. The acoustics were amazing. And yeah, it kind of just embodied everything that I wanted to have people experience. The only downside, it was like really on the outskirts of Barcelona. As a yoga studio owner, I see that like that wasn't the place to be, but financially I could afford it because it was outside Barcelona, it wasn't city center. And that's what I wanted to come across as I wanted to give people a space that they really felt, as well as a practice that they really felt as well. And I feel like the space goes really hand in hand. And everyone said that when they went in there, they're like, wow, the space, like the energy, you can feel it.
So,
So
did you
I'm really
find, because
proud of it.
this, I guess, is good for lots of like new yoga teachers out there, or yoga teachers that want to expand. Some of the expansion might be to own a yoga studio, and the natural habit will be, where are people? Let's put a studio where people are. And the fear, I was actually just having a mentor call with someone who is in Zurich, and we were chatting, and he was saying that actually no one will travel. Everyone just goes to their local yoga studio. So, what do you think about where you were or what you were doing made people willing to come to you? I'm guessing what you created was quite niche. You didn't even call it a studio, did you? It was more like an academy.
An
Like,
academy, yeah.
were people actually willing to travel because you created it as a very niche thing? Like, what was your strategy?
So my strategy was originally, I had this little WhatsApp group originally of that village that I lived in of 50 yogis. And I was like, oh, with 50 yogis, I'll open a studio. I can pay my rent. Let's do it. And then when I opened it, kind of like weirdly, none of those 50 people showed up. It
They
was kind
never do, do they? All the people that say,
of
yeah, I'll do more workshops in this
so
city, don't book it.
yeah. Yeah. I was really lucky though that I actually opened when COVID hit, which sounds really like it shouldn't help me out, but it did because people were willing. In COVID times, 2020, suddenly people were really onto social media, so that helped boost me at that moment as well. And people saw the space and they were like, I value being in a beautiful space, I value travel, and I'm going to come to you. So I really launched my studio with COVID. And even though we had so many restrictions, like 2 meters apart, I think that gave it the buzz that I needed. So people were like, oh, wow, this space is worth traveling for. And they did the effort in the COVID months. And then afterwards, they kind of continued that effort.
And on a practical level, I'm guessing you had a car park.
It was in a village, so people just parked around wherever they could.
Okay, so, 'cause I've known studios like that. They've opened up in amazing areas, but there's nowhere to park. Literally no spot nearby. Cool. So the space is stunning and the academy idea. How did you come up with that? Why academy rather than just kind of yoga school or yoga studio?
So I came into this role of being the head of a method called Navakarana, and I was gifted, kind of gifted this role and the opportunity to run teacher trainings. So as the first person to run teacher trainings in Europe, together with the creator of Navakarana, we decided to name it the Academy, because it was really the first yoga studio that could offer trainings and become an academy for the community of Navakarana. So it became like the central point of studios to come to learn, to progress in their teacher trainings. And as an academy, I became kind of like the classes were set in a way where you would learn from them. I know all yoga studios, you do learn from them, but in a sense that as an academy, I can talk about like how we structured the classes, but you're learning in the classes rather than experiencing a yoga class, kind of,
I get what you
if I
mean,
can,
and
if it
that's
makes,
almost
you know
the
what I mean?
opposite of what's happening in London at the
It's like
moment.
I'm teaching you something in a class.
And was that against the grain at the time? Because like right now in London, I feel that people aren't wanting to learn. Fair enough, they're wanting an experience, community, fun. There's a little bit less of a desire for education. And is that still the case? Were you just an anomaly that somehow it seemed to work?
Definitely, as a community, we had huge discussions about it, and the vision of the creator of Navakarana was he used to work in a yoga studio, and he calls them yoga shopping malls, because he's kind of like, I'm going to go to the shopping mall nearest to me, and I'm available from 5 to 6. Who's the teacher? What class is available? It's not necessarily. Sometimes you go, I want that teacher. I want what he's teaching me. And that's great. And that's the really power of the teacher. But as a studio, most people just want the convenience. So he was really against it. And he was like, I want to frame the teacher and allow the teacher to teach and say, I'm going to teach the essentials of movement in this class. I'm going to teach breath in this class. I'm going to teach you the full series, but you're going to feel lost in the full series unless you study it. So
I
it
love
was
that.
kind
I
of,
love that analogy. That makes a lot of sense to me, the shopping mall. 'Cause I talk about it a lot that like in London that people just go to the class that works for them and a studio that works for them. And I don't know if you have it where you are, but we have Class Pass in London where
it's
people
so
pay a
hard for,
membership and they get access to like 50 studios. So it very much is just whatever suits you at that time based on the credit you have available, as opposed to traveling for a teacher. And I think that's how yoga has changed significantly in my
Yeah,
like
totally.
12, 13 years teaching it.
I definitely think, like there are definitely pros and cons to those apps. The ClassPass ones, and there's so many of them in Barcelona. And I was so adamant not to use them. So in the first, I guess I had my studio for 5 years. So the first 4 years, I didn't use any. And I was like, this is what I'm offering. This is my price point. If you want to learn from me, then you have to go through my app system. And it went really well. But then as studios started opening up, I just had this anxiety, like I'm missing out. Like these apps are getting so popular. And so I started to integrate it in my final year, as I guess like my last desperation. But I was really adamant on like, being this boutique studio of like, if you want to learn from me, then this is how I do it. And then people liked it, but it was hard. you're going against the grain, or kind of like going against the flow of what people are expecting to pay and the ease of
And when you said there, your last act of desperation almost,
it.
would
Yeah.
that
Yeah.
motivate, like, was that a motivating factor for leaving the studio? Was it getting a little bit too tough and moving to New Zealand?
There were like so many elements, as in like one element is you are the academy, and you're on the outskirts of Barcelona, so you're not an ideal location. Everyone loves you, so they want to learn from you, and then they want to do your teacher trainings. So of course you make teachers of your trainings, and so then they open up studios in Barcelona. And then you realize, wow, all those people that made the effort to come see me, they've got a studio right next door to them. And I'm happy for them. Those are my students. They learn from me. So then I ended up realizing that as an academy, it was great, but it no longer is my bread and butter. It's no longer going to feed my family. And I don't know if it's sustainable, kind of, to pay these big bills, to pour hundreds of hours into teaching classes, if the classes are going to. Just, it's so exhausting to have this rotation of new people, because in the end, those new people, the objective of my academy is to turn you into a teacher. So that's a really exhausting process as a studio. So if it just became a teacher training location, I think it really would have worked. But because it was a yoga studio that transformed you into a teacher, it was like, wow, I now need to find a new group of people that want to become teachers.
And isn't it interesting as well? And this is so common, I think, today, is people do a training. And you almost never see them again. And there could be many reasons for that. Maybe they hate you. Maybe that's just it. They've had they've done 200 hours with you and they're done.
It hurts. It hurts when they never
But
come to see you
sometimes it
again.
could be, that again, they just can't afford it. You have a studio, they've got a job in another studio, and that studio gives them
Yeah,
free
exactly.
classes. So why pay for you when they're getting free
I know.
classes? Or
I
they feel
know.
that they've learned all they have from you. And then
Yeah.
they're looking for more trainings with different teachers, etc. And I
Yeah.
think there is real power in going deep with one person. I think have
Yeah.
supplementary trainings as well, but I guess the art of just learning from one person consistently over many years to some degree has been lost a little bit, perhaps, in kind of big city European studios. If you do a
Yeah.
training with one person, maybe do their 300 hour if you really like them, but then you're
Yeah.
kind of done. You're done with them and you might see them just once or twice in the future. It's an
Yeah.
interesting one. So is that was that a
I yeah.
motivating factor for leaving full stop? Or I'm sure there are other factors for moving to, it's quite an extreme reaction to move to New Zealand.
Yeah,
It
the class pass
was
has done
done.
me out. No, it wasn't that. It was a few huge things. So that was like a little element, kind of like it could have worked out. I'm sure I could have restructured and captured people another way. But it was more of so there was that, then there was like the tax of Spain. Like, as any young entrepreneur, you just feel like you're being attacked on all sides, kind of pay this, pay that. And it's just not sustainable to try to be an independent business owner. So that was really, really hard financially. And then I don't know what the tax is like in the UK, but it was like really hard in Spain.
I would not
And
want to open a
then,
studio. I notice that for those reasons.
yeah,
It's not on my
yeah,
to-do list.
exactly. Yeah, exactly. And then, so that just pulls all the fun out. And I think a lot of yoga teachers open the studio because they're just so passionate. They come into it with no business ideas, real business structure. And then you kind of like financially get depleted, and then you have to really study your numbers. So, yeah, I guess both of my husband and I are creative. So we've learned the hard way through the years of like how to financially run a studio. But then it also came to a time where I realized the studio was built on someone else's objectives, who I have total respect for. It's my teacher. He was my guide, so after so many years. But we realized as a married couple that it's really an objective of someone else's life goals. And what are my life goals? Is it really to run trainings of someone else's method? And it was really hard, especially when you love someone so deeply, a teacher. It was really hard to face, and maybe even like have that confronting conversation of like, can I leave this? I've built an academy. Am I allowed to leave this? Am I allowed to not be this person anymore? Be this person that represents a whole community. It was really, really hard to face, and I tried to ignore it, even lost my voice for 2 months because I realized I wasn't facing
Wow.
this conversation. And then it wasn't until that I had a huge, not huge, huge, but was pretty big. I had an accident on my little electric scooter and fell on my head, and I should have cracked my neck. I should have had a huge head injury, but somehow the helmet saved me, and then I had just a graze, a fracture on my cheekbone. But that, when you have a child and when you are confronted, it felt like I almost could hear the universe saying, "Listen." And it was like a huge smack in the face saying, "Listen to your inner voice saying, and confront those fears and have the conversation that, and realize that it's okay that this is not you anymore. And even though that you've built it and you've put all your finances into building something and it is working as a teacher training studio, maybe not as a yoga studio, but it was really working and my career was really growing into this teacher trainer of Navakarana. But I felt like, but it's not me, it's me representing someone else's goals. And even though I am finding myself through this method, I felt like I'm not no longer finding myself on like, how do I want to create? I just didn't feel I could create inside a method. And with all the love and respect towards it, it shaped who I am now. But I felt like it's now time to kind of like be a family and focus on that. And how can I build freedom around that? Freedom to explore, creatively, and be a mom, enjoy my hours in the day.
And then Kiwi, because you are Kiwi, you're part Kiwi, you've got family there. Is that was that the motivation behind the move there?
So I am Kiwi born. My father is half Kiwi, half British. So, but the funny story around that is that I didn't get the Kiwi passport from birth, but on my 16th birthday, my dad just came back from the immigration office renewing his passport, and he was like, "I just found out that I was born the date before they changed the laws that my children can inherit the New Zealand passport."
Perfect. Okay.
So at the age of 16, I had this golden ticket to Australia or New Zealand. And I was always like, wow, I can live there if I want, like easily. So I held on to that New Zealand passport and always had this dream of like, I'd love to live there one day. But I have no idea what it's like. Like, I'm not a Kiwi. I don't know the lifestyle. I've been there many times on holiday. Is it a holiday life or that I'm craving, or is it a lifestyle that I'm craving? So it was something that was itching me since 16 years old, and kind of like when I had the accident, it was kind of like live your life, don't make it a retirement plan, and just do it, have the balls and just do it.
How exciting. And how long have you been here for now? It's been a few months.
3 months
Okay, so it's
only.
all still very fresh.
Yeah, super fresh.
And so
Very raw, closing down the studio, moving here, like going through so many emotions.
on I bet. But so on a macro level, like what is success for you now? Because you've talked about kind of living someone else's dream. Have you managed to articulate what your dream is yet? Do you want to share it, but have you got some direction?
I just feel like dr the dream is to have time and space, mental space, to I feel like I coming here, I just want to eloquently say it in one sentence so you could like capture it and put it on put it on there. But I feel like I'm in the process. I'm not winning at the game. I have no idea what I'm doing, but I'm definitely following my heart, following that inner voice that I know we all have, in that pursuit of true happiness. And I knew that deep down that happiness didn't come from financial gains. I was earning a lot from teacher trainings, annual teacher trainings, knowing that you're having that income, knowing that you have a huge brand like Oysho sponsoring me in Barcelona, I feel very proud of myself to give that all up in the pursuit of the time that I wanted with my family.
Nice.
I didn't have the time to enjoy my practice, to enjoy teaching and my family. So it's that balance that I was like craving. And I feel like just moving here and taking off those burdens of like paying the studio bills, running the classes, when's the next teacher training, just having all that baggage unloaded and starting again. And now I'm starting again. I'm going so slowly. Like, do you want to teach at this studio? Do you want to teach at this yoga studio? I'm like saying no to it all for the first time and prioritizing my online because online gives me that freedom of time. And I do value online and in-person classes, but I feel like online keeps me close to the students that I built a huge relationship with in person. And the online allows me to do that and see my little boy for dinner and for breakfast. So,
And the people online, in a world that's saturated with online stuff, the
yeah.
ones that decide to be on your membership are the ones that really want to be with you. It's not the random
Yeah.
class passer, it's the people
Totally,
that
yeah.
actually like you and want to learn from you and want your input into their life. And I think what you described there is almost like the
Totally, yeah.
double level of brave. Because people talk about leaving corporate jobs to become a yoga teacher. And that is brave, to leave that steady income. But you've kind of done that. Then the second layer is leaving what people would perceive to be a dream job.
Yeah,
For relative unemployment to some degree, then that so that is like a second level of brave to leave the thing that you put on a pedestal as the thing perhaps you wanted to leave your mood board. I'm not saying you had a mood board, but if you had a mood board, I imagine that would be owning a
that
yoga
was it,
studio
yeah.
was on the mood board. But to leave that is very brave, and I think as yoga teachers, myself included, I find it so hard to let go of classes. Now, even though I know they're kind of draining me, and perhaps sometimes they're not making money by the time I've got into a sitting, come back out again, but I find it so hard. And maybe I haven't got that bravery to just do my own thing, despite the fact that I'm sitting in a beautiful studio with all the camera gear and could just move entirely online. It's an interesting one.
Yeah, I think it's I definitely don't take that as a solo bravery. My
No,
husband,
yeah.
I feel like doing things hand in hand with your partner just makes you that even more braver to be able to like bounce ideas and dreams off each other and kind of the danger is when both of you are agreeing all the time and you're like, yes, let's do it. And so
What so how tell me, let's talk about working as a couple. So to what
yeah.
degree is it that you're both involved in the same thing all the time, or are you just kind of two people working in the same world that overlap slightly?
We're very much on the same thing all the time. So we envisioned our yoga studio together and built it, and he was the kind of the behind the scenes, and he allowed me to just focus on teaching, which was such a pleasure. And then now with the online platform, he was like, allow me to do that for you again. Allow me to build the online platform and deal with all that stress, techie stress. And you create, you connect. And it's such a breeze for me to do this online because I don't have that baggage of the techie side, which is really hard. And as well as o owning and running a yoga studio, the managing of people, all of that business side, I'm so grateful to have a partner that kind of wanted to take on that side and allow me to be just a yoga teacher.
And do you have any tips for couples that, 'cause I guess more and more people are going to want to work together with their partner. Kind of it makes sense to some degree to pool resources and pool skills. Like my wife and I, we don't actually work, although on the surface we do, it doesn't look, we don't actually work together that much. Like I support her by using all the gear, buying camera gear and setting up microphones and the like. But it's very separate businesses entirely, really. We just maybe use each other's skill at times as temporary freelancers. It's a bit different. So would you have any tips for people that do want to work together who are a couple? What have you learned along the way?
I don't know. It's just kind of like I definitely just feel like we understood each other's skills and his skill was really the camera. He studied graphic design and then went into the filmmaking. And so he just really took the reins and was like, I have the skills behind the camera. You have those skills. And so let's stay in our own two worlds and dominate them. So I support if he wants to do a further course and educating himself on that side of it, and he supports me. I don't know. So kind of just
Clear boundaries. It's kind of a,
you
I guess,
stay in your world,
before,
I stay in my world, but we keep working together.
you know, you
Yeah,
have
and it
roles, you have clear
works.
roles. It's not, and you
Yeah.
have clear expertise. Like, this is my thing, I'm in charge of that. That makes
Yeah, I
sense.
think it would be hard if it was kind of like, oh, have you dealt with that invoice? Have you closed? Have you basically closed the sign off on this? It's kind of like, no, all that is you, and
Yeah.
then all of, and he trusts that I will be the one moving the marketing
I
on the
think in
yoga
theory,
side.
it's kind of like just a relationship in general, like in a healthy relationship.
Yeah,
You do different stuff. One of you takes the bins out, one of you washes the
yeah,
dishes,
exactly.
maybe. And I think
Exactly.
that kind of works. That kind of works well.
Exactly.
Now, this method that you were involved with for many years, and I guess you say it's influenced you. What drew you to that style of yoga? We don't need to talk about it in depth, but what made you
Yeah.
resonate with that style, and what parts of it, perhaps, particularly, are you going to carry forward with you?
What really impacted me in the literal space of coming into that room and experiencing a class with my teacher was his use of chanting and rhythm, and his words guided you within a set tempo. So he would mark the rhythm with a stick and block. And so he came from a world of percussion, and it came from a world of dance. And so how he combined a yoga class, instead of saying the cues, you had them memorized. So we were dancing all together. And unlike a normal vinyasa class, which is kind of like you do the movements, and then sometimes people just unsync with each other. And instead of being in sync with each other through a playlist, he is the musical instrument. He's setting the beat, and he's marking your breath, and then he's singing a melody on top of your movements that you have memorized. I really was kind of mesmerized by, almost like hypnotized, like clapping, singing. You feel like you're dancing, putting all those creative elements into one class. I carry with me on now, and I love to sing. I love to mark rhythm, and that's what I know that most people that have done the teacher trainings with us, they've all been impacted by this element of the chanting in class and this beat that we're marking constantly.
I'm
So
intrigued on
yeah.
your thoughts here, because obviously there's so many pathways of yoga and so many ways to do asana.
Yeah.
Everyone wants something different. You know, some people want an anatomy geek talking at them for half an hour. Some people want a flow to music. I think there's something for everyone. Now, but what are your thoughts on doing something collectively? In that,
Yeah.
undoubtedly, doing something completely in sync with other people
Yeah.
is amazing. Okay,
So, yeah.
That's what's unifying about football chants. You've got 10,000 people in a football stadium chanting, stamping, doing the same thing together. There's something wonderful about it. But at the same time, we talk about yoga as a practice of self-inquiry. And
Yeah.
from a physiological level, we all have different lung capacities. And are we trying to explore our breath or limited by the rhythm of the class? So, and I guess it's a question of priorities to some degree. So do you ever think that there is a limit by making everyone move together? But then, of course, it's completely valid to say there's a limit to it, but also there are the benefits to it, and I prefer the benefits to that.
Yeah, I think what I also appreciated about the method is that it was always labeled as a multi-level class. So you could have a very advanced practitioner floating into handstand in the same inhale as someone stepping forward. So it was really the skill set of the teacher on can I guide and satisfy a full class? Meanwhile, we're enjoying this communal breath and this communal movement. everyone's still enjoying the same practice. So we're all dancing at the same time, but satisfied at our level of practice.
And I guess that
So,
style of yoga maybe builds community more than other
yeah,
styles, which again, but
exactly.
you could argue that actually, if we're going to have a bigger benefit in society, what we don't need is self-inquiry to the deeper level. We actually, what we need is more togetherness. And I think that's completely valid. I'm playing devil's advocate to my own style of teaching, to be honest. But I think, actually, togetherness is something we need more of, and loneliness is the biggest epidemic. And anything that makes people feel part of a whole is perhaps a very powerful thing.
I think practicing together is really powerful. And I know I'm an online teacher, but the in-person practice is very, very, very powerful.
Oh, so what's your moves forwards? Like, you're in a new city now with a reputation, with a following, with a respect. I'm sure lots of testimonials from people that love you, and you're getting offered opportunities. So what is your next step? Is it do you think it's to set up trainings again to follow the model? Is it to do something very different? Do you know yet?
So I came here with that confidence, being like, okay, so I've set a reputation for myself, and that's great. And then you arrive on the other side of the world and no one knows you. So that's been really humbling, kind of arriving to New Zealand and Australia, and they're like, sorry, who are you?
You show me your phone. Do you have the phone ready, like
I'm
on your
like,
page? I look at my followers.
and I'm so and I feel I have a lot of respect for Kiwis because I think they're so anti it, and they're kind of like, don't show me that because I really don't care. So I feel like it's humbling. I'm starting almost from the ground up when it comes to the in-person credentials, kind of like getting the studios here to trust me and trust my word. Like, oh, I've done teacher trainings before. Would you like me to host a weekend workshop or an intensive? So I've really got to build that up. Whereas I know that in Europe, it would have been way easier to contact a studio. And I would have take I just took it for granted, like, oh, I'm coming to Madrid. Would you like me to do a workshop? Whereas here I'm back to kind of like feeling quite intimidated by the big studios and trying to find a little pocket there. So instead of focusing too much on the in-person right now, I've decided I do feel confident in keeping my community strong. So I've really pushed the online in the last 3 months. And that has helped push my creativity, just creating new series and sequences constantly each week. And that's helped me kind of get out of the heartbreak of having followed a method for so many years, to just like enjoy the freedom of exploring again. So I'm really enjoying that process. But my big goals, you could say, is definitely to go back into the teacher training scene. But all I have known is teacher training scene within one method. I don't know what the teacher training scene that you're a part of, which is the whole world of yoga. I've only been in one tiny method. So I'm quite intimidated by the huge yoga teacher training scene that exists out there, but I'm really eager to get into it.
I think a really nice way in is like identifying like speciality skills that you can offer. Like if I'm running a training, whether it be a 300-hour one or whatever it might be, if someone says to me, I would love to teach this module, this is what I can offer in a module, I think that works really well. I think that can slide well into trainings. Because obviously, I think any teacher trainer's fear is if they get too many people involved, there's going to be lots of conflicting information. Like you can't have one teacher that's going to teach these asana and another teacher that's going to teach these asana and then another teacher is going to teach anatomy, because they could all potentially be like contradicting each other, and it all gets very confusing. And that's why for my 200-hour training, it really is just Michael and I, and
That's
we
nice.
separate it. Like he is more, obviously still teaches asana, but he's breath work, meditation and philosophy, and I'm like asana and technique and holding space and teaching skill kind of vibe. The separation is there. But I think when it gets to, if someone approached us and said, I would love to teach a 2-hour verbal communication skill workshop, or I would love to teach a workshop on the deities or like, or how to use music in class, then and those kind of modules, I think that's really an interesting way to contact people. And I think that's what I'd be tempted to do if I was going to in that environment where I didn't know people, is be like, I'm not going to take over trainings, but I can offer this that is slightly unique. I think that's cool. Maybe.
Yeah, no, that, I think, so I'm so new to these ideas of like how a teacher training can be offered to people. The fact that you can combine two individuals' backgrounds and put it together, I think that's super beautiful. So I'm really excited to learn about other teacher trainings. I'm almost tempted to kind of join one just so that I understand this whole other world that I haven't been exposed to. I've been really kind of closed in on one method and not naive, but kind of I purposely chose to stay in that world. Kind of like when you come into yoga, you really, and maybe you find your teacher and you feel like I've found my path. What's the point in exploring everything else? And I feel like I'm really in a moment of like, I want to explore everything right now.
on this journey of discovery, like, have you already encountered like information or ways of thinking, whether it be asana or philosophy, that slightly contradict what you've perhaps been used to?
Definitely. As in like, I was introduced into the world of yoga and the word yoga was never mentioned. You know what I mean? As in like, so the method that we're in, we were educated on the history of yoga and how it was brought into Europe and the meaning of a yoga practice in India and the gymnastic practice in India have been kind of fused and what's been delivered into the Western world. And so I don't know what that fusion looks like because I've come from a lineage that has chosen to, that is very new. It's not an ancient lineage. It's a lineage of like one man. And I feel like I want to learn. And I think that it's okay that yoga was infused with gymnastics in India. This world of meditation and seated meditation and enlightenment was fused with gymnastics and then delivered here. And I don't think there was anything wrong with that. But then I think just through the years, I've kind of learned to like, oh, I'm not allowed to join those two. But other people have chosen a yoga path where they have joined those two. And so just learning about it and being open to the idea of like kind of learning on yoga philosophy more. I'm very kind of very new to that world of philosophy. I've only know about it very lightly. I've entered more on the physical practice that's had like a mental and holistic impact on my wellness. But on the philosophy side, I'm still very gray on that area. And I know that it's very fused with the asana world in other teacher trainings.
I would shout out there to a guy called Richard Rosen. Have you come across Richard Rosen?
No.
At all? So like, he's probably in his late 70s now, maybe, but he's, you know, written many books on yoga. And I think if you're looking for like an amazing philosophy teacher, he's wonderful. He's written like his history of yoga book. And there's one book that I always recommend to anyone. It's a quickish read. It's Yoga FAQs, like frequently asked questions.
Oh, awesome.
And it's a really cool book. And he is the most humble, wonderful, beautiful human being.
Awesome.
Yeah, so I'd say check him out. Let's shift gear a little bit to social media and like how you navigate it, especially with children. Like actually just walking into the studio tonight, I saw an advert. It was an advert from Ireland. And the advert was a couple walking through a shopping centre with their child. And this man saying,
I
like,
saw that.
Hi, Daisy, how are you doing? And the parents like, do you know who that is? And
no. I think someone that I don't know actually sent it to me. And I took it as like, oh, am I doing this sometimes? Am I guilty of this?
And just for listeners, and so the next step was, like someone said, "Oh, happy birthday, Daisy. Hope you have a great day." And then everyone's getting freaked out. And then someone's like, "Oh, I hope your dad picks you up from football this week and he's not late again." And then
I know,
obviously the
it's
idea is
horrible.
just stop sharing information about your children. And so how do you navigate it? Because I find that as a dad now of two, like I don't do as many interesting stuff anymore that I want to take loads of photos of that doesn't involve my children. I love my children. I do amazing stuff with them. And then also when I'm a teaching, I've never been a fan of taking photos when I teach at all. Or when I was in the Lake District this weekend, there's no photos. There's photos of some lakes and like old walls, but not a photo. You wouldn't, there's no evidence because I'm being there. I'm in the moment. So how are you navigating it in a new city with kids?
It's I've definitely before having kids, it was I took the approach of like share my personality, share what I'm about, share my day outside of just yoga. But then when a child comes along, it's definitely extremely sensitive. I've kind of fell into the trap of like exposing him too much in the early days just because I was sponsored by so many brands. Like, please take a picture of your child in this what do you call them? Stoke seats, the chairs or the prams. And so I had this obligation to like show my lifestyle now with now with a baby using all these products that I've been sponsored by. So I was like saturated by that, all these brands wanting me to share my life as a mom on social media. But now that he's growing and his face is developing and is getting captured on through social media, and with this move to New Zealand, I realize I want to show and inspire. I feel that is really sad that sometimes the comments that I get that when I do decide to share something that I feel is not too intimate, it's an image that it's seen with such almost perverted eyes. Like it's really sad. It's really sad. And I feel like imagine if everyone decided not to show the love of a family, to show a really united family bond. Like, what are we showing then? Just selling things? Like, I have this debate, like, who I am as a yoga teacher is really what I'm trying to express on my social media channel. And so, an image, not too detailed of his face, but an image of me enjoying a simple swim with him, I feel like I want to share that. And I don't, and I want people to stop looking at it in a really toxic way.
I think it's so important that people share family stuff. In the
Yeah.
reason being, I think there's lots of negativity about family and lots of negativity about having kids almost on social media. And it could just be that, we're in a bit of a
Yeah.
echo chamber. And I've seen people recently, like who were trying for kids for a long time and sadly weren't able to have them, then saying, like a year later, my life is better without kids. And of course,
Right,
you can't know that.
yeah.
Or videos saying, I've never had a moment where I thought a kid would make it better. And a
Yeah.
very ill-informed statement
Yeah.
because you don't know because you haven't experienced it. And I think there's almost a lot of people being turned away from having kids, and then perhaps later in life, really regret they
Yeah.
missed out. Unity, because for me it's the most magical thing in the world. It's given every part of my life
Definitely.
meaning. So I think
Yeah.
the sharing of like happy families, content families, I think is really important. But again, it's without cross that line is hard to navigate. And like my rule is at this stage, I never want photos of their face that are very clear. Like a bit of
Okay,
video
yeah.
movement is fine, but I'm like no like close up face headshots. I really am against. That's where
Yeah.
I draw the line at the moment. And I keep
Yeah.
poking my wife and I stop it. Yeah,
I know, yeah. I have to kind of educate myself on the power of AI, and I'm realizing it with like the reels that you talked about. And in the beginning when AI came out, I was kind of like, that's not really gonna happen. And then you're realizing like, yeah, this can get out of hand. And right now, our kids are only three. We don't know the extent of bullying when it comes to teenage years or when they hit 11, 12. So exposing my kid too much on social media. I'm starting to be aware of, like, I don't want social media bullying to happen based on what I've exposed him to. So
And even things like I'm so keen on like never really sharing my address and never like the school uniform, like never making sure that the logo is never anywhere online, all these little things. On a happier note though, let's do some quick fires. What would a good week look for you now going forwards? What would make the rest of this week good? What would happen to make this a good week?
A good week would be that I go li online live and everyone's decided to wake up and join me. Because sometimes I go live and even though I'm getting a good influx of people joining, they're choosing to join the recordings rather than the live. So I'm really enjoying when I get like just three people join me live with a time difference. So I'm kind of craving that satisfaction of teaching a class and people being there because right now I'm only dedicating to online. So a really good week would be connecting, seeing people's faces, practicing together, and having my son these days have been amazing weeks because we've driven around the corner and he's jumping up and down saying, "Yay, kindy!" Like his excitement going to kindergarten has like made the whole move worth it. So each week has just been a blessing. The fact that my child is actually happy to go to school, that's like mind blowing. Because it has been re a real struggle in when we were in Spain to
Was
have.
okay.
Yeah, so that was a really hard I thought, like, is that normal that he's just not happy to go to school? Or am I sending him too many hours? So I think just a good week is the weeks that I've been having so far, which is a really happy kid, some time with him and practicing online. Yeah, just I want to keep
Nice.
going, keep that rhythm, and hopefully just it grows from there. I
And it
can
sounds
hopefully I
like
can
you
stick to this formula.
would. It sounds like you do. You've got a little bit of space and time, some self-inquiry and some learning. What are the things that you're particularly drawn to at the moment? Are there any books, any movies, any teachers that you're really kind of digging into, whether it be yoga or not?
It's definitely still physically based. Fascia, I've been seeing so many things and hearing so many things about fascia.
Just side
And
note, loads of charlatans in the fascia world. There's loads of people who are like, oh, this fascia does that, and they're just very salesy.
I've been feeling the benefits. I've signed up to a course which is called Beauty Fascia or Beauty, or I think it's called something Glow. But apart from initially you thinking it's going to give you all this beauty benefits of like a facelift, it's giving you all of this detoxing drainage effects. And I'm feeling so much lighter just
Oh.
literally in my headspace, just from focusing on draining and releasing tension in my neck and shoulders. And kind of rediscovering my alignment of my neck, why it's feeling so blocked and all that tightness. And just working on such a small area is less intimidating than suddenly learning fascia and all these lymph nodes across my body. And I think the head is actually somewhere so powerful that if you can release and study that, then it has this beautiful effect of just draining out the whole body because you've released all of these t tensions up here. So you're suddenly getting this blood flow to the brain, and I'm just feeling so good about it.
That's
So I
cool.
def yeah,
I've
so I
never come
definitely
across it.
re
So what's it called?
recommend.
Beauty fascia.
It's this girl from Northern Europe, and she's called Anastasia. And she has this course, I think it's called Beauty Fascia, if I'm correct. No, I'm just I have so many emails, I don't even know. I can't believe I can't remember what it's called. But
People can
something
Google
glow.
it. Type beauty fascia Anastasia, and it will
Glow,
come up somewhere. And is there a message? We'll get to kind of where to find you in a second, but is there a message you would like to leave all of your students with that might be listening, or anyone in the world, any message that you would like people to hear that could serve others?
Would be to follow your heart because it brought me here, and I feel like it's that's the biggest instinct that's going to help you reach your path towards happiness, is to
Nice.
follow your heart, and don't let it go on for too long, because life is super precious. Even the tiniest accident, taking your bike for a ride, going for a walk, opening the door, walk crossing the road, life can change in an instant. So follow your heart and live now, because you never know about tomorrow.
Lovely. Thank you. And where can people find you beyond New Zealand? Online, where can people find
So
you?
far away, you have to like travel 36 hours to find me. But find me online through my online space, which I'm building with my husband, Mana Online. And I hope to come to Europe in 2027. I'm kind of leaving
Planning
2020.
ahead.
Yeah, I'm leaving 2026 to settle. I've been
Makes sense.
tempted to go back to Europe and do all these big workshops and things, and I kind of just want to. And again, I listened to my heart, and I was like, I don't feel like traveling right now. I need to like honor this new move and stay right here and dedicate time to this new life. So I'm gonna dedicate 2026 to being here. And so you can find me 2027, hopefully coming to a city near you in Europe.
Maybe, who knows? Things could change again.
Maybe.
Maybe. Thank you so much for your time. It's been
Thank you,
awesome. And
Adam.
make sure people follow your Instagram as well, which is an acronym of your full name, isn't it? Absmo.
Alessandra Barbara Suzanne Montesenia Aurum. So
Perfect.
Absmo is my Instagram page, and Mana Within is my new online space.
Cool. Thanks
Thank
so
you,
much.
Adam. The